This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Here's what Pittsburgh's talking about. Running a restaurant is hard. Launching one can be even harder. And launching a new one every couple of weeks seems like maybe madness. But pop-ups are really popular here in Pittsburgh. We're here with one chef who, from the outside, makes it look like a Scandinavian piece of cake. It's Thursday, March 30th. I'm Megan Harris, and this is CityCast Pittsburgh. It's Thursday, so I hope y'all came hungry. I'm here with a local chef whose menus can certainly help get you there. Nick Forsberg, welcome to CityCast Pittsburgh.
Thanks, Megan. Thanks for having me.
Of course. And congratulations on your James Beard Award nomination. That's kind of amazing. Are you totally overhearing that by now?
I am, but I'm still pretty elated about it. It came as a big surprise, but also at a perfect time when we were applying for our loan from the URA for the restaurant. So I had to snag the application back real quick. I was like, can I just pencil something in there maybe?
Well, and we're like minutes, hours away from hearing whether you are moving on from semifinalist to finalist. I don't want to jinx it, but do you have, you know, any adoring fans to thank or anything?
I didn't even know that was today.
That is today.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, great. Now that's another level of anxiety that I'll enjoy.
We're always here to help. So you run a pop-up called Fet Fisk or Greasy Fish. How would you describe the cuisine?
Oh, I'm not getting any better at answering this question, but it's Nordic, Scandinavian inspired kind of by my heritage, but really it's more focused around sustainability and traceability of the ingredients. I run my own farm where we grow about 90% of the produce that we use, and everything else is either sourced from the region or, as far as seafood goes, I just make sure that it's sustainably harvested.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the backbone of the concept. But from there, it's just sort of loosely European, French-inspired stuff with kind of a Nordic twist.
What does Nordic mean for my plate? What would I see or get to experience, you know, food-wise that would feel, I don't know, maybe different for some of Western Pennsylvania?
Dill.
Yeah? it's all down to the dill?
Yeah, it's like, I'll just throw some dill on here that makes it Nordic.
One single herb.
I think it's pretty simple food.
Yeah. Did you have to do much research? Were you kind of pulling from family memories? Is there a grandma's recipe somewhere in here?
I mean, there definitely are a few of those. But again, I only made it over there every so often. But definitely have some standout food experiences, especially like my great grandma eating chanterelles fried in butter at her house in the country in Sweden was like, I mean, I was 8 years old and that just blew my mind. I had never eaten anything like that and wouldn't eat anything like that again for another 10 years maybe.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like self-implanted or projected. Like it's sort of like in my imagination what I would want to see. So it's like one step away from the actual reality of most Swedish food, which is like meatballs and potatoes at a truck stop, you know, it's like, or like kebab.
So this farm, it's in Lincoln, Leamington, I think I read. Which came first, the food or the farm?
Well, initially when I started Fet Fisk, I was working at Tiny Seed Farm for Todd Wilson. I was kind of like the field manager for him.
And they're all organic, right?
They are, yeah. And I mean, when I moved to Pittsburgh 6 years ago, there weren't a lot of restaurants that I was excited about working in. I felt like there wasn't much. I mean, that's not to say, I mean, like it's come a long way too, but I think I just transitionally, it wasn't seeming so attractive to me. And so I kind of like happenstance. I like worked at a restaurant that Todd worked at. He ran a farm, and then I started working for him and really fell in love with that as like another avenue to explore like food production. And so I think it's always been in the back of my mind. And when we first started FetFisk, anyway, this is my long story.
Go in.
But like started FetFisk, I was working there. And so like we started January 2019, so no veggies then. But as soon as stuff started popping out of the ground, I was like, this, it was all over the menu. So I was like, well, this makes perfect sense. I'm going to harvest this stuff the day before dinner. Like, you can't match that freshness, you know?
Yeah. What do you grow in your garden?
Right now we have peas going in the ground, arugula, dill, radishes, cabbages, and then into tomatoes, peppers, eggplants. Watermelons is one of my favorite things to grow. Then we do, you know, pumpkins, squash, more fall cabbage, things like that.
Yeah. And then with the garden itself, how does that like kind of affect your creative process? You know, does it feel constraining to be, you know, have 90% of your vegetables come from it? Or
no,
is it kind of fun?
No, I need that. Honestly, I think if someone, you know, just gave me a blank piece of paper and was like, what do you want to cook? I don't think I could come up with a single dish. But
you're an like 8 crayon having, box kind of guy, not a 64 crayon box kind of guy.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it really, you really get to like squeeze some creativity out of your brain when you're confined like that. Or at least I do, I think. And I mean, every week I just make, I'm a huge list guy. I make lists of all the vegetables that I have, what kind of like preserved stuff I need to use. And then the menus just come from there. So.
But what if, you know, your pop-ups are planned weeks in advance? What if a critter gets into the garden and destroys something you've got on the menu? You know, that changes things, right?
Yeah, it's a little inconvenient, sure. But I mean, it's like I'm at the farmer's market every week with our stand, mm-hmm. so I can kind of make up for losses there. So
hey, CityCast listeners, this episode is brought to you by the Pittsburgh Opera. You know, a few weeks ago, some friends and I went to La Traviata, and I confess, it was my very first opera. But Jens, it was incredible. So I was very excited to see that they've got a new show coming to the Byam Theater. It's April 27th through May 5th, called The Passion of Mary Caldwell Dawson. It's about a real person, a Pittsburgher and heroine, who in 1943 is managing a million moving pieces with the National Negro Opera Company. They're all set to perform on a floating barge just to avoid all the segregated venues, but bad weather strikes and they've got to figure out a way forward. If you want to know what happens next, you'll just have to attend. The show is in English. It does have a little dialogue. It's kind of short for something operatic, just over an hour, and tickets start at just $15. There are all kinds of discounts for students, teachers, seniors, and veterans. Plus, the Pittsburgh Opera's new rideshare program gives patrons up to $60 worth of Uber vouchers to get them to and from the show. If this sounds up your alley, get your tickets now for The Passion of Mary Caldwell Dawson at pittsburghopera.org. Did you know or have any kind of hunch that pop-ups would be this popular, not just in Pittsburgh, but kind of everywhere all of a sudden?
I mean, the pandemic was just like, you know, a revelatory moment where people are like, maybe I don't necessarily want to bust my ass for something that's not mine all the time. And
yeah,
I mean, I know I felt that way. And I decided to, you know, make the move to full self-employment during the pandemic.
I bet.
A pop-up, it's like a sandbox, you know, and so people are, you know, they're trying their hand at stuff. And I think it's a great way to get started. I mean, it worked for me.
It is working for you. I've wanted to go, but every time you have sold out almost instantly. I'm really impressed, actually, that the James Beard people managed to sneak their way in.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there was no expectation there that anything like that would happen. And then I just fell on the floor. But
you did. So you had no indication that they were coming at all?
Yeah, now it's even worse. Yeah, I mean, I was trying to like take a month off or something to get into planning for the year and deal with all this restaurant logistical stuff. And then that dropped. And then I have people beating down my door to come eat and also sell me like DirecTV and SodaStream guns and stuff like that for the restaurant. I'm like, you got to hold your horses. Like,
it's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
So this restaurant, it's a location in Bloomfield, the old Lombardozzi building. I want to play a little tape, actually, from your GoFundMe page.
My name is Kate Romaine. I have Black Rice Kitchen, and I have been a chef in Pittsburgh for about 3 years. Is that true? I'm elder, but I'm not ancient. The first time he did a pop-up in our space, I was more than impressed. With his organization, the people that are working with him, super professional, but also obviously his food is some of the best food that's happening in Pittsburgh right now, and I got really excited for this project. So we all know that restaurants are a labor of love, and you have to keep in the creative space. And one of the ways, you know, from my own experience, not having financial stress when you open or are a business owner is huge. This type of funding that Nick is going for will keep him in the driver's seat as far as his creativity for both his food and for his workplace culture. So he'll be able to make decisions that are informed of the way he wants to create and control his business model.
You're 3/4 of the way towards that $40,000 goal. I've seen actually some like Pittsburgh famous and like kind of famous names on your donation page. What's it been like to watch those roll in?
I mean, it's been pretty great. I think we knew we would have some community support, but like the generosity of anyone donating, but also certain people has been really humbling. And it'll help get us there for sure.
Are you nervous about expanding? I mean, I've only seen photos of Lombardozzi's, but it seems pretty big. Like,
yeah.
What is it, like over 70 seats or something in the bar and restaurant?
Yeah. And then there's 3 banquet rooms.
Whoa.
So I think total, maybe the space at capacity might be like 250.
Oh my gosh, that's huge.
So you could say I'm a little nervous, but honestly, I think like having events capabilities and the ability to expand within the space is going to really go a long way for keeping our kitchen staff well paid and keeping the restaurant afloat.
So you've got your loan, you've got some crowdfunding, and then you're contributing money as well.
Correct.
I don't know. How does it affect your motivation? Does it add risk? Does it add to your creative process?
It added a lot of anxiety when we were going through the loan application process. But I think it made, I mean, we put in, like, I'm now Greg Austin of 412 and Kate Romaine are part owners now. And, like I have some equity after running the business for a little bit, and they're chipping in some, and that ended up only being about, I mean, our total project cost is around $400,000. So we are putting in 40, hoping to get 40 from the community via the GoFundMe. And then the loan was about 320, which, we got a commitment letter 2 weeks ago. So I'm sleeping a lot better now.
Congratulations. I know that's a big load off.
For sure. Yeah. I've been able to shift my mindset from just ambient anxiety about that going through now to be like, how do I actually make this happen? And I'm feeling energized and motivated.
What's the timeline to open then?
Oh, everyone wants to know, don't they?
They do.
But we get keys to the space in June, and then we probably have seven months of remodeling. So late this year, very optimistically, realistically, it's going to be probably more into next year.
Do you think that you'll keep doing a Monday service when the restaurant's up and running?
Right now, yes.
Cool.
I think we gotta keep the spirit, and we kind of have a captive market on Mondays already, and there's just nowhere else to eat on Monday nights.
Sure isn't.
Not after the pandemic, at least. So yeah, we're wanting to keep that spirit alive and just do a totally banging ass industry night.
Sweet. Well, we'll keep looking for that. And we'll put them in our newsletter too, assuming they're not sold out within minutes every single time. Nick Forsberg of Fett Fisk, thank you so much. We'll keep our fingers crossed for you later today.
Yeah, thank you. This was really nice, Megan.
And an update. As promised, a few hours after we talked to Nick, the James Beard Foundation released their finalists. He wasn't on the list. But another Pittsburgh favorite, Apteka, is. So congratulations to both of them. Getting recognized in any way from this organization is a super cool accomplishment. Winners will be announced in June. A little more news before you go, and we'll get the icky stuff out of the way first. Police across the Commonwealth responded to a ton of fake 911 calls yesterday, alleging school shootings all over the place. Our county dispatch center got two of them, one for Oakland Catholic and another for Central Catholic, both high schools in Oakland. But those hoax phone calls also hit other schools in other counties. Bucks, Beaver, Cambria, Northampton, Lehigh, Erie counties, maybe more, plus a bunch of other states. Our state police and the FBI say they're looking into it, and in our own small way, so will we. You can listen for more on that next week. And keeping with today's food theme, a Pittsburgh culinary institution is closing. The downtown McDonald's has chosen not to renew its lease. Their landlord told the Trib that it's because foot traffic is down, and they also sort of alluded to this sense that downtown is falling back on hard times. And speaking of that, while the Golden Arches won't be there to welcome us anymore, the Golden Triangle Ambassadors will. The Pittsburgh Downtown Partnership is deploying an 11-person squad to make the neighborhood more welcoming for all of us, offering advice to anyone looking confused and, of course, keeping an eye out for crime. Usually, I'm trying to avoid eye contact with strangers, but hey, maybe this will change that. That's all for today here on CityCast Pittsburgh. Remember, every Thursday, we're going to be focusing on food. So if there's anything you want to hear about, please get in those DMs. Send us an email, pittsburgh@citycast.fm, or text us or leave a voicemail at 412-212-8893. All that stuff is also in our show notes. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, I'm like stuck on the ride now, you know, so the bar on the roller coaster has been securely fastened. Yeah.